Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Fascinating story in the New York Times today by Jeremy Peters, titled Why Michael Savage is Blasting Hannity and the Right-Wing Media on the Virus. I have actually, over the years on this program, praised Michael Savage a number of times, not because I agree with his ideology and I think he said many things that are just truly reprehensible, including his Muslim bashing, which continues to this day. But he is brilliant at what he does. He's a brilliant storyteller. He's a brilliant talk radio host. And, you know, as much as I disagree with what he says and the positions he holds, you have to acknowledge that skill, just like you have to acknowledge that, you know, Trump is a brilliant showman. You know, he's going to end up with $2 or $3 billion of the free television time by the time the elections roll around with his nightly TV rallies. Same thing. We would just be pretending reality wasn't reality if we didn't acknowledge those things. But Michael Savage is now the lone voice on the right who's calling out these guys. He says, this is from the article, quote, the pimps in the right-wing media who tell you what you want to hear. He's calling them out. He says, they're intellectual dwarfs. They're science illiterates. Michael Savage, of course, actually has a PhD from the University of California and training in epidemiology. He said, we're living in a terrible time in America where the truth has died. How can we not let our side be called on the carpet when they lie to the people, says Michael Savage. Do you understand the danger you're in by listening to these people and just following them blindly over the cliff? And, you know, he makes jokes about Dr. Hannity and all that kind of stuff. Fascinating. There are some people who are paying attention. That's the good news. I guess the bad news is that Michael Savage's audience is nowhere near as large as Limbaugh's or Hannity's, who are subsidized. If you go back to the Politico article, Kent Vogel did it several years ago, back in 2013, I think, maybe a little later than that. But in any case, about how Limbaugh and Hannity are getting millions of dollars a year in subsidies from these right-wing groups like the Heritage Foundation. Meanwhile, a fellow by the name of Jeff Wittenbrink was admitted to the Baton Rouge Medical Center with the coronavirus. It worsened over the weekend. In addition to pneumonia, he's battling a high fever and a persistent cough. Now, who is Jeff Wittenbrink? Turns out he is Tony Spell's lawyer. Tony Spell is the Louisiana preacher who held big gatherings over the last couple of weeks. And in fact, last week he said, quote, death is a welcomed friend. This is from a raw story by Matthew Chapman. Last week, Spell urged followers to defy public health lockdowns and attend church services, even if their lives are in danger, saying, quote, death is a welcomed friend. This week, he started a social media campaign urging people to take their $1,200 checks and send them essentially to him, to send them to churches, rather than pay for food or bills or pay down your credit cards. Well, Tony Spell's lawyer was there. He was on April 2nd and on April 5th, you know, on Palm Sunday, he was there at the event that this so-called Christian pastor held. And now he's in the hospital in bad, bad shape, which I would never wish on anybody. But it just, are people actually putting their lives at risk by showing up for Tony Spell's things? Yeah. Meanwhile, I get mail from Donald Trump. Dear Fred, recent polls are showing tremendous disapproval across the board for coverage by the lamestream media. Only a fraction of Americans believe what they're saying. It's pathetic because their ratings are so low, they can't stand that millions of Americans are tuning in each day to hear a real update from their president about what's going on in our nation right now. The fake news media can't stand that he's telling the truth. In an effort to silence Trump, some lunatics have even suggested that he stop his daily press conferences. This is just more proof that the left-wing media has become unhinged and they are truly the enemy of the people. President Trump wants you to know that he never stopped working to keep America safe. No matter what they throw at him, he'll continue to stand before you each and every day and tell you nothing but the truth. We know we can't trust the left-wing media, so we just launched our official press conference approval poll, and we're counting on patriots like you to take it and help us break through the fake news filter once and for all. And of course, you click on the poll, and it asks a couple of questions, and it asks you for money. And then the other one I got, that was from 2 days ago. This is from yesterday. Fred, once again, Democrats are prioritizing their corrupt political dreams over the well-being of American citizens. With nervous Nancy and crying Chuck as their ringleaders, they're choosing to block a $251 billion funding boost for small businesses around the country, which would help them keep their employees on payroll. We can't let them get away with their un-American actions anymore. We need to send a message that's so loud that even the fake news media won't be able to sweep it under the rug. You get how this propaganda, every day in my email box, or virtually nearly every day, at least 4 or 5 times a week, I get one of these things from the Trump campaign begging for money. And I'm guessing that there's a bunch of old folks around America who probably sent him all of their life savings. It's incredible. Meanwhile, in Texas, Attorney General Ken Paxton has just issued a letter saying that if you ask for an absentee ballot in Texas, you could go to prison. Seriously. In Texas, the law says that if you want to get an absentee ballot, you must either be over 65 or disabled or out of the county, absent from the county during the election. You know, like overseas or in some other part of the state or whatever. Those are the only provisions. So Ken Paxton, who is the Attorney General for Texas, dancing to the tune of, you know, Greg Abbott, the governor's, the song he's singing, all the Republicans are. We don't want people to vote, right? Well, elections have never been won by the majority of the people, and they will not be in the future. Quite candidly, our leverage in the election goes up as the voting populace goes down, said Paul Weyrich famously in 1980 when he was doing voter suppression campaigns for Ronald Reagan. Or vote theft campaigns. Greg Palast says, you know, somebody steals my car. I don't say my car has been suppressed. Why would you say that their vote has been suppressed if they steal your damn vote? Well, he has issued a letter saying that fear of contracting COVID-19 is not a valid excuse. And if you get a ballot and you vote a ballot based on, quote, false information, that would be that you're saying that I'm afraid of COVID-19, that you would face, quote, criminal sanctions. In other words, you could go to jail in Texas for getting an absentee ballot. Now, this is being appealed, and it's going to be interesting to see what comes out of the courts, but this is how bizarre and dysfunctional the Republican Party is, and that the only way that they can hold power is to prevent people from voting. It's just amazing. The news is just relentless, and the Trump BS, and now you've got the right-wingers and the DeVos family and these other right-wing billionaires funding these right-wing groups that are going out into the streets saying, it's like snowflakes, right? We can't handle being locked up for, you know, being in our houses for a week or month or 3 months or whatever. Poor conservative snowflakes. The big question, though, that the media is asking is why? You know, I caught the last hour of Joe Scarborough's show this morning, you know, Morning Joe, and he seemed to be seriously troubled by this. Why is it that right-wing billionaires are funding protests of shelter-in-place orders in the states, including against Republican governors? Now, the largest protest, of course, was against a Democratic female governor. And, you know, the groups that show up are notoriously misogynistic and racist and all that kind of stuff. But still, why? Why is it that Fox News is pushing so hard? Why would to reopen the economy? Why would Rupert Murdoch or Lachlan Murdoch, the billionaire owners of Fox News, be pushing this so hard? You get, you know, Dr. Phil, the disgraced shrink who lost his license for inappropriate relationships with his clients on Fox News going, a few people might die, but no big deal. I mean, you know, literally not saying that, but the effect of it. Why is it that these TV doctor pundits over on Fox News are saying that, 2 or 3% of the population dies, that's acceptable? When Dr. Oz said that, you know, there was all this blowback, and he came back and he said, because he was talking about children can go back to school, and he came back and he said, 2 or 3% of the kids aren't going to die. No, probably not. It'll probably be, a tenth of 1%. Instead, they'll take the disease home to their parents and their grandparents, and 2% of their parents are going to die, and 20% of their grandparents are going to die. I mean, why are these people saying this? Why are they doing this? Why are they willing to sacrifice our elders and our vulnerable Americans? You know, over 35% of Americans are obese. That is outside of being elderly, being, in a nursing home, basically, that is the largest risk group right now. Overweight and hypertension and diabetic. That is the largest risk group. That's not just old people. That's 39% of Americans. Old people are only 16% of Americans. Why is it that they're willing to sacrifice these people? Is it possible that the reason that these right-wing billionaires are pushing these efforts is because any more stimulus packages are going to drive the national debt up to the point where even Republicans are going to have to agree that it's time to raise taxes on billionaires? I mean, I can't come up with a more direct and simple answer than that. Why else would they not care about public health? Why would they put the economy above public health? Well, I think it's fairly obvious. Every month that this country is shut down is going to require about $2 trillion of stimulus to keep us going. It's just that simple. And where's that $2 trillion going to come from? Ultimately, it's going to come from taxes paid by billionaires. And they know it. And if there's one thing right-wing billionaires don't like, it's paying taxes. You know, over the years, they got LBJ to drop the top tax rate from 91% down to 74%, and then they got Reagan to drop it all the way down to 25%. It's down now. A lot of them are paying 22%. Billionaires pay less in taxes than do working people on the bottom half of the wage scale. Working people making $8 an hour pay more in taxes than billionaires in America. The billionaires want to keep it that way. Do you have an answer to why they are doing this? I think follow the money is, the advice that Mark Felt, Deep Throat, gave to Woodward and Bernstein is always good advice. Follow the friggin' money. Yesterday, I posted a tweet on Twitter, and I want to more and more kind of step back from the general craziness. This weekend, I'm going to try and just take a fast, or at least on Saturday, take a fast from the news and read a novel, take a bath, go for a walk, enjoy nature. I think I'm going to try to do that. I've just been up to my eyeballs in this stuff for a couple of months now. And of course, it's my job to do this. But I think that for all of our mental health, it's a good idea if every now and then we back off. And this tweet that I posted yesterday got a huge response over on Twitter. You can go over to my Twitter feed. It's Tom_Hartman, Tom_Hartman with two N's. And what I wrote was, and this came out of Louise and I took a walk, again, down the Columbia River, and it's on the takeoff and landing pattern for the airport here in Portland. If you walk briskly, you walk about 3 miles in an hour. That's a good brisk walk is 3 miles an hour. And our walk was about 40 minutes. We walk about 2 miles. I didn't see or hear a single plane land or take off. And as we're walking along the river, I looked up at the sky and there was literally not a single contrail in the sky, not a single jet vapor trail in the sky. And Louise and I were talking about how this was like when we were kids. And so this is what I tweeted. I tweeted, not a single jet vapor trail in the sky above Portland today. I remember being 5 years old, laying in a hammock in our backyard in Lansing, Michigan, watching a single jet carving a long arc across the sky. It was 1956, and there was as little air traffic in 1956 as there is today. A statistic, by the way, I got from NPR yesterday. And then I asked the question, what do you remember? And got just some of the most beautiful responses. People talking about June bugs and, you know, warm summer nights and butterflies, lots and lots of butterflies and honeybees. And, you know, people just remembering life, remembering what the world was like, you know, before this, the recent insanity of Trump and coronavirus and all that stuff, but also, you know, the last 20 or 30 years of population pressure and global warming and the insect holocaust and all that. So, you know, I toss that out there if you want to share some of, you know, your memories that you think are important. Governor J.B. Pritzker yesterday announced that the Midwest governor, you know, Trump did his press conference yesterday. I was so pissed off by it. I dropped the F-bomb in a text message to one of my employees or one of my colleagues, one of the people who works with me on this show. It was just like, I just can't do it. I can't watch this guy anymore. So anyhow, as Trump is saying that he's going to take all the praise for any opening of the economy, but all the blame is going to go to the governors. That was the essence of what he said yesterday. The New Mexico governor's office, this is insane. The Santa Fe New Mexican, right, the newspaper in Santa Fe, is reporting. Well, actually, let me back up a little bit. There was a tweet from a spokesperson for the governor. The tweet's author, his name is Trip Stelnicki. And he's the chief spokesperson for Michelle Lujan Grisham, who is the governor of New Mexico. And his tweet says, you don't have to ask the death cult their opinion or publish their quotes. False equivalence now is actually life or death. There is no both sides to this. There is one group preaching accelerated illness and death because they love business. And if you can't see through that, now that was his tweet. So the Republican Party comes out in New Mexico and demands an apology, saying this is absurd, offensive, and disgusting, you know, these characterizations of Republicans. And so the governor's office points out to the Santa Fe New Mexican, the newspaper, that the tweet does not reference any person, any group, any organization specifically by name. If someone seems to think it's about them, I'd say they've placed that upon themselves. Right, death cult people. Meanwhile, speaking of the death cult, this is just an amazing story. This is from the Times of Israel, timesofisrael.com. This is published in Israel, right? This is Israeli news. I'll just read it to you. U.S. intelligence agencies alerted Israel to the coronavirus outbreak in China in November, Israeli television reported Thursday. According to Channel 12 News, the U.S. intelligence community became aware of the emerging disease in Wuhan in the second week of November and drew up a classified document. U.S. intelligence informed the Trump administration, quote, which did not deem it of interest, end quote. But they did tell Israel and they did tell NATO in November. It's incredible. Meanwhile, chew on this one. Bloomberg reported yesterday, and I quote, during the first 10 days of the federal government's small business rescue program, the spigot was wide open in Nebraska. Firms there got enough money to cover about 3/4 of that state's eligible payrolls. It was a different picture in New York and California, where companies received less than 1/4 of their share. Nebraska, of course, has 2 Republican senators, a Republican governor, Republican members of the House of Representatives. New York and California have Democratic governors and senators. There may be a Democrat representing Nebraska, but, you know, would be in a minority. So Representative Jackie Speier, a Democrat from California, retweets the Bloomberg report and adds her thoughts. She says, I'm hard-pressed not to think that this is political. Blue states like California got a pathetic number of loans issued. Nebraska got nearly 75% of loans requested. I smell a rat with orange hair. Yeah. Yeah. And again, this is the reality, right? The right-wing billionaires are pushing the movement, and the movement is pushing to reopen the states. So the pressure is on in some of the red states. Ron DeSantis has announced today that he's going to be opening beaches again soon in Florida. You've got some, you know, the Kristi Noem, the Republican governor of South Dakota, is like, you know, we're not going to lock down the state, even though we've got the biggest hot spot in the entire United States, with the Smithfield packing plant, which, by the way, is owned by a Chinese company. This is pork for export to China, by and large. Well, it may be, actually, probably a lot of it is consumed in the United States, but it's owned by a Chinese company. So Trump, seeing that the red state governors are getting ahead of him on this thing, goes out yesterday and says, I'm going to allow, he used that word, allow, I'm going to allow the governors to open their states on their own schedules. Every state is different. We're going to let the governors do it. So if a governor opens their state, Trump gets credit for it. And if it works out badly and, you know, the virus explodes across the state and they have to shut it back down again, Trump can blame the governor. I mean, it's heads I win, tails you lose. It's just incredible. And as I said, it ignores the vulnerable. The obese is 39% of the U.S. population. Over 65 is 16% of the population. And Trump's plan has nothing in it about testing or quarantining or contact tracing, which are the actual things that are being done by countries like Denmark and Germany and Austria that are actually starting to very slowly reopen their economies. Because they can, because they have testing in place. But we don't have testing in place in the United States. You still can't get a test. Yes, we've done a couple of million tests in the United States. We've done a lot of tests. We have 330 million people in the United States. We're going to have to be testing people who are in contact with the public. We're going to have to be testing them, you know, regularly. We should be testing healthcare workers every single day. We should be testing cops and firefighters and EMTs every single day, so that, you know, when one of them becomes infected, they don't become the vector for 50 of them to be infected. But then you got Kristi Noem going, oh, Americans have given up their liberty. We can't have the government paying for these things. Eventually, the taxes on billionaires are going to go up. Unless you've got a better theory. Is it genocide? Is it that, hey, it's mostly hitting poor people and black people? Oh, well, that's
You're
okay.
Listening to the Tom Hartman program.
Say the physically fit right-wing white billionaires. Is that what's going on? Whoa, Donald Trump tweeted, liberate Virginia and save your great Second Amendment. It's under siege. Liberate Michigan, liberate Minnesota. He's trying to provoke an uprising against Democratic governors. Has he lost his mind? This is absolutely breathtaking. Anyhow, Bruce in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Bruce, what's on your mind?
Well, to answer your question of the day, the billionaires and the Republicans that they own view the loss of even the dollars worth of economic activity as far more tragic than the loss of human life. Really, if you're not rich, you're expendable. And I think that's the essence of everything.
Yeah, and perhaps the thing that I was missing, I was assuming that the billionaires were upset that they would eventually have to pay taxes to pay for the stimulus. But the flip side of that is that the billionaires got that way by business activity, and business activity is ground to a halt. So a lot of these billionaires are probably seeing their income slow down, and that's got to be flipping them out. Yeah, good point. An excellent point. In fact, thank you, Bruce. I think spot on. Jeff in Fort Dodge, Iowa. Hey, Jeff. What's up?
My concern is, Tom, about these meatpacking plants here in Iowa and in the Midwest. We find out that plant in Sioux Falls, 85% workforce is immigrants. Here in Iowa, we've had two plants, one in Waterloo, I believe the Bison, one in southeast Iowa. They've erupted with coronavirus. I just listened to Governor Reynolds here in Iowa, and she says, Well, we talked to them today about kind of relaxing their work requirement rules. So that kind of told me that maybe that these plants were having these folks work when they were ill. Because it sounds to me, and now they're rushing testing to all these plants, it looks to me like they should be testing these plants when there's nobody showing up with the coronavirus.
Well, we should be doing that all across the United States. You know,
we should be
testing everybody.
It looks to me like we're opening the doors here that all these communities around these plants are just going to pretty soon mushroom into a mushroom cloud of COVID-19.
Yeah. Yes, and then it's going to spread into the communities, and then it's going to spread into even the remote rural areas. You also wonder, you know, why is it exploding like this in meatpacking plants, but it's not exploding in, you know, plastic extrusion factories. You know, this is a virus that likes to attach itself to animal proteins and works through animal metabolic systems. And I'm wondering if it can just survive longer and more easily on the surface of a dead pig. And that's the way it's being spread around the factory. I mean, who knows? I don't know. Or if even, you know, it's possible that hogs are starting to catch the disease and spread it around. You know, the meatpacking plant is after they're dead. I'm assuming the slaughterhouse is somewhere else. So I don't know what's going on with this, Jeff, but it is very troubling. I'm with you. I've told you about this pharmacy in Canada that I've used in the past. You know, it's a good place to get drugs inexpensively. And I'm on their email list, and they sent out another note today. They said, one of the largest pharmaceutical wholesalers in the United States recently confirmed, quote, "We are experiencing back orders and declining inventory levels at rates never before experienced." And then they write, "Most of the inventory we are currently acquiring was manufactured prior to the coronavirus crisis, or is being manufactured from raw materials stocked by drug makers prior to the crisis beginning." And they go on to note that they think that this is probably true right across the board for virtually all the drugs, because they say the current supply of prescription medications being acquired by consumers everywhere in the world since the drug manufacturing worldwide came to a halt over the past several weeks. They note the entire worldwide prescription drug supply chain, including drugs sold in the United States, come from China and India, where the coronavirus has had a significant impact on factory production. And China and India shut down their factories a week or so ago. And that's, you know, where most of your generic drugs are either coming out of China or India. And then secondly, this from the Associated Press, and it's just worth noting. The Kremlin says Russia will gratefully accept President Donald Trump's offer to provide ventilators for Russian coronavirus patients. Trump said Wednesday the U.S. was ready to send ventilators to Russia, saying, quote, "They're having a hard time in Moscow. We're going to help them." Russia has had 232 deaths. We have had 30,000. And the number over 30,000, I think it's over 34,000 now, if I'm remembering my numbers right. In fact, I can take a look at it here. The Johns Hopkins doesn't list American deaths. Let's see. Oh, yeah, this is WHO. You got to dig to find it. Dave in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, not too much, Tom. First, I just wanted to say I'm really glad you keep covering the way the Trump administration ignored the intelligence community. I know it's hard to talk about, but it's so important that we capture that he ignored this, because, you know,
we knew before that he was ignoring the intelligence community in December. Now we have proof out of Israel that he was ignoring the intelligence community in friggin' November.
It's not James Bond stuff, all right? What I wanted to call about is to get your riff or opinion or whatever you want to call it on how, because you mentioned the coronavirus likes animal proteins, right? It seems to.
And, it enters cells through the angiotensin receptor, which is the hormone that regulates blood pressure in humans and presumably all other mammals. I can't say that with certainty, but I'd be astonished if it wasn't. Go ahead, Dave. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Lisa Miller, she did a study for UC Davis. She's the head scientist at National Primate Research Center, where they studied the impact of particulate matter that is released from forest fires and brush fires on primates, all right? And it 2.5 micron, that particulate matter, has a definitive adverse impact on young primates, you know, which humans are part, as far as the, you know, their immune response. But it's not so certain for adult primates, the immune response. Okay, so my question is, COVID is a CPR, you know, cardiopulmonary respiratory. It prefers that part of our anatomy. What do you think is going to happen during the forest fire season? Do you think this is going to reemerge, COVID?
You know, because people have their immunity diminished because of the smoke in the air? I don't know, Dave. I mean, there is some speculation that what's killing people isn't so much the virus replicating, but the body's response to it, these so-called cytokine storms. That's what's filling up the lungs is basically, you know, the byproducts of your own immune system. So if your immune system is suppressed, they're doing a clinical trial right now. I mean, the ones on remdesivir, or however you say this, Gilead drug, those look very promising. But they're also trying some of the immunosuppressive drugs to see people who they pretty much know are going to die anyway, to see if they can calm down that cytokine storm. They can calm down the body's response, immune response. So it may be that, you know, people who have hyperactive immune systems, which is most Americans, you know, we don't have parasites anymore, that, and that's why we have all these autoimmune diseases that people take immune suppressants for, you know, the psoriasis and arthritis and all these other things. It may be that people would actually be in a better position if their immune system, I just don't have any idea, and we don't know. But keep thinking, Dave. I love the way you think, and your curiosity is always fascinating. Lori in Portland. Hey, Lori, what's on your mind today?
Well, I wanted to tell you about a study that they're starting in Corvallis, Oregon. It's in the Gazette Times paper yesterday. And they're going to do random testing to about 1% of the population. And they're going to go door to door through all different neighborhoods in the city. And anybody can volunteer to take the test with or without symptoms. And they're having help through Oregon State University and the veterinary program to run these tests, and people will get the results back in 7 to 10 days, and they're giving them to the Oregon Health Authority to see how many people in the community throughout all the different neighborhoods may have had it or do have it and are carriers without even realizing that they're spreading it.
Right. This is the antibody testing that they've been doing in Germany for months. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're doing it throughout the whole community, and they would like other veterinary clinics to get involved because they have the capability for the testing. So I just thought it was really interesting and would like to. They're starting here, I believe, this coming weekend, and they'll do it 4 weekends in a row. They go to your door. They ask you a few questions. They'll leave you a test kit. You take the sample and leave it out, and they come back the next day and pick it up. So it'll be interesting to
follow the
study and see what. I know, right? It's in Corvallis, Oregon, in a little city. So
they're doing it in Corvallis. That's fascinating. Well, Lori, keep us up to date on that, would you? When the results come back, check it out?
Yes, I will.
Okay, thank you very much. John in Portland, Oregon. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
As horrendous as the pandemic is, I think many people are numb to the massive figures that we see, the 600,000 cases in this country and the 33,000 deaths. And every time I see that showing on TV, I think that the one thing that they should be saying is to compare that to the population of the United States, that we are 5% of the world's population, but we have 32% of the corona cases, and I think up to 22% of the deaths now. And I think it's increasing that ratio is increasing at a percent or two a day.
And this is all because Trump did nothing for months.
I would like to see a reporter go into these press conferences that the Trump holds and say, Mr. President, how do you reconcile the fact that we are 5% of the world's population but have 33% of the cases and 22% of the deaths? How can that not represent a failure of your policies in combating the pandemic? Maybe sometime when Mark Pocan is on, or one or the other representatives, if you could suggest to them or talk to them about, there should be an organized response to these pandemic conferences, a 30-minute rebuttal of where real experts present what the real situation is, identify the lies presented in those press conferences, and tell us what actually should be done. If it was hosted, you know, if it was led by Joe Biden, that would be great, okay? But it needs to be a nonpartisan presentation, and it needs to be something that the Democrats demand that every news station or cable station carries, including Fox News and America One. And what they can do to get Fox News to carry such a thing is, if they refuse to do it, to contact everyone who advertises on it and say that if you do not force them to carry these rebuttals, which are in the interest of the American people, that we will identify you as part of it. And what you should do is withdraw your advertising from Fox News if they will not.
You know, John, none of that's going to happen. It's just, it's not going to happen. People have tried to organize advertising boycotts against Fox News, and you could argue that the one against, well, actually, there have probably been a couple. O'Reilly was, you know, it comes to mind, might have been successful, rather. But you're dreaming. These are for-profit businesses, these media, and Trump is making them money.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Connie in Reno, Nevada. Hey, Connie, what's up?
Hey, Tom. You know, Donald Trump has always wanted to be a mob boss anyway, so I say from now on we just call him Don Corona. I think that's appropriate.
I love it, Don Corona.
And the other thing is, aren't those meatpacking plants, aren't they the ones who were going to Mexico and, like, advertising for help, encouraging illegals to come up?
Yes.
And I think this just shines a light on why we need to give even illegals health care. Those people could not go to the doctor and get help as soon as possible.
Sure.
And that's infuriating. So I just
want to pass that on. Well, it's not only infuriating.
Thanks, Tom.
Yeah. Thank you, Connie. It's not only infuriating, it's also spreading disease. I mean, this is, I've had no shortage over the years of right-wingers come on this show and try to tell me, you know, liberal Democrats want to give health care to people who aren't even citizens of the United States. And I'm saying, well, if you were sitting next to one at a bus stop and they were coughing and we were in the middle of a tuberculosis epidemic, wouldn't you want them to have health care? At which point they usually go something like, well, talk to you later. It's a public health issue. Come on. You know, wake up. Wake the hell up. Thanks a lot for the call. Leonard in Sugar City, Colorado. Hey, Leonard, what's on your mind?
Trump is dragging his feet on testing. Do you think that could be because he knows that the situation is a lot worse than what's being reported?
I think that there's a lot of magical thinking going on in Trump's head, and that he doesn't take instruction well, he doesn't learn things well, and that he still thinks that maybe he can just bluff his way through until November. The election's only 200 days away from today. And, you know, that's, you know, he's got to be looking at that, or he is looking at that, saying, okay, how can I get the economy kind of back in shape? And he's got the Fed pouring all this money in. I think he is thinking that he can pull this thing off. I think he's badly miscalculating, but he's going to get some good news cycles out of it, and, you know, before it all falls apart. But I think that that's a possibility, Leonard. Thanks a lot for the call. Sean in Stamford, Connecticut. Hey, Sean, what's up?
This is something I've been thinking about for a while, and your article from Israel sort of cinched it. And I begin to wonder, and I'd like your opinion on this, and certainly if I'm going down the rabbit hole, that it has this whole thing with Trump botching this whole coronavirus response more a feature than a bug.
Yeah, it may well be. Yeah. I still believe that these guys are operating on the herd immunity theory, you know, which Boris Johnson was operating on until he realized how stupid it was, and as was his health minister, Matt, whatever his name is. And
yeah, I know. Because for me, because, you know, having a psych background, I can pick up on these signs, and I wanted to get your opinion because I thought, you know, can't just be me thinking this. Someone else got to be saying this too somewhere.
Yeah. No, I think this is it. I think they think that if they can get enough people infected in red states and on the other side of the, you know, and recovered, those states can crank back up again before the rest of the country catches up while California is still in lockdown. And, you know, I heard a person on TV this morning use a metaphor. He said, that's like saying that we're going to designate this end of the swimming pool as the place where people can pee. And the rest of the pool, people can't pee in the pool, right? And, I mean, it's a perfect metaphor. You say, well, yeah, in South Dakota, you know, they can pee in the pool. But you know, the rest of us in the pool here, you know, we can't. It's nuts. But that's what they're doing. Susan in Alachua, Florida.
Alachua.
Is that right, Susan? Hey, what's up?
There are people in North Korea or Korea who have been reinfected with this virus. So unless there is some kind of a serum to keep people from getting reinfected, I don't think that there's ever going to be something that people got infected and then they can go off and not be reinfected again and go to a job and do whatever they're going to do. They're going to get reinfected.
Well, these people, Susan, you're talking about, I think, what is it, 8? People in South Korea that have had this, or maybe it was 11 people out of millions and millions and millions of people. The question at this point, because the test is very invasive, you've got to shove a swab not just into somebody's nose, but through their nose up into their skull, into their sinuses, in order to get a sample, a good enough sample. And because that, and people jerk back and sneeze and all kinds of stuff when that happens, it's why the people doing the tests have to have full face, you know, shields on and things like that. And so because of that, there's a substantial suspicion that those people were not reinfected, that they simply had false negative tests because the tests weren't performed right, or that, you know, it may be that this virus hangs on a little longer than we thought. It might be a few extra weeks or a few extra months. So, you know, but there doesn't seem to be evidence yet. And again, this is all evolving, that this would be like the diseases that, you know, like the spirochete diseases, like Lyme disease, where it hides out in your joints and then pops back to life, you know, months or years later. There's, to the best of my knowledge, no evidence of that. So the question, though, is how long the immunity lasts. And one of the things we're going to find out, there's numerous big studies being done on this in several different countries, where they're taking the blood, the serum, the blood, the clear part of the blood from people who have had the disease, and they're injecting it into people who have the disease because it contains the antibodies. And they're also finding that in their virus experiments, or excuse me, in their vaccine experiments, that when they inject people with fragments of the spike protein, the protein on the outer surface of the coronavirus cell, that are the these are the spikes that link into the angiotensin receptor sites on cells, which are, you know, in huge numbers on lung cells and, well, blood vessels, basically, but particularly in the lungs, they're one of the most vascularized parts of the whole entire body, that when they inject broken pieces, broken fragments of these proteins into people's skins, the body produces a very, very strong antibody response. And that's a good thing. That indicates that, a vaccine may be possible. Question is, how rapidly is this virus going to mutate? Is it going to, will there be seasonal mutations like there are with the common cold or with influenza? We just don't know the answers to those questions yet. But I think the idea that somebody who tested positive, then tested negative, and is weeks or months after they, after they've long been symptom free, could then again become contagious, that is not yet something that science is accepting. Those are purely largely anecdotal cases, and they're the outliers. Dondi in Seattle. Hey, Dondi, what's up?
I recently had the opportunity to watch Fox News, and I bump over there occasionally to see what's going on. It was recently added to my TV programming. Anyway, I was caught a little bit of Sean Hannity, and, I can only take about 5 minutes before I have to shut him off. But I wanted to hear from one of the Michigan protesters that he's going to have in his next segment, so I stuck around and listened. And I was quite caught off guard. It sounded like extremely draconian the way she was describing the lockdown by Governor Whitmer there. Like, people couldn't go out in their motorboats on their lake. They couldn't go to their lake cabins. They couldn't go hunting or fishing or any of that. It sounded, a little crazy. So it was keeping me up all night, and I had to look it up this morning. And from what I could see from the EO 2020-42 of the governor's is that I'm assuming you can go out in your kayak, single-person boats, that the lady that was on from Michigan portrayed as a liberal sport activity. And then you can go to your lake cabin. Well, I'm assuming you can go to your lake cabin, but you can't go to campgrounds where people are going to congregate. And the thing about the boating, you can be out in a boat with your family, maybe two people. So everything was just misinformation and something about, sporting activities. Well, of course you can't go to a range because you're going to be putting people in danger that have to work there. Of course you can't get a license for hunting or fishing if you don't already have one because, again, you're going to have people having to serve you to give you those licenses. But it just all seemed like a whole bunch of misinformation. Closed.
Well, that's what you get on Fox News. You get heavy slant and selective data, and this is the way that Fox News has been lying to its people ever since it was created back in the 90s, as I recall. And this is something Limbaugh has been doing since he started in 87. This is the only way that right-wing media can succeed and sustain itself, is by lying to its people. I pointed out day before yesterday, I mistakenly said that Montana had a Republican governor. And I had, you know, dozens of people on Twitter, you know, literally shouting at me, one of them calling me fake news, saying, no, it's Steve Bullock, he's a Democrat. And it's like, that's how rare it is that I get something wrong on this show. And I go out of my way to make sure that it's fact-based. You see, you hear Rachel Maddow say, tell me if I said anything wrong, you know, to her sources. She's, you know, it's almost become tiresome to hear her say it. But it's like, you know, those of us in the real world are actually concerned about truth and about reality and checking facts and making accurate statements, particularly when you know that people are going to repeat them. On Fox News and on right-wing hate radio, that's very much not the case. Their job, this is propaganda, their job is to cause people to believe and behave in a particular way, regardless of its connection to reality. And that's now what Donald Trump is doing every day with his Trump rallies on TV. So two stories today that raise some interesting possibilities. The first is the story out of Israel that in November, U.S. intelligence agencies notified Israel that this coronavirus was floating around in the area of Wuhan, China, and to get ready. And in fact, even speculated in this memo that our intelligence agency sent to Israel, even speculated about the political consequences of widespread infection in the Middle East when this virus gets there, as it has now. So that was in November, according to Israeli television and Israeli print media. And then this Hannah Osborne reporting over on Newsweek, newsweek.com, the headline, coronavirus outbreak may have started as early as September, scientists say. And this is based on looking at the genome of the virus. And they're thinking that it didn't actually start in Wuhan. It started in that state. But it might have started as early as September in a small town near Wuhan and then traveled from that small town into Wuhan. And it's absolutely fascinating. It's they published their work now in a peer-reviewed journal. As time goes on, we're going to learn more and more about this. But, you know, once again, this that would help explain why in November our spy agencies were able to pick this up and share it with Israel and share it with Donald Trump, who, quote, had no interest in the issue, end quote, or words to that effect. But yeah, and speaking of Donald Trump, I mentioned this before, but it really deserves focus. Trump, in all caps, tweeted, liberate Minnesota. Minnesota, of course, has a Democratic governor. And then he tweeted, liberate Michigan. Michigan, of course, has a Democratic governor. And then he tweeted, liberate Virginia and save your great Second Amendment. It is under siege. You know, liberate and siege are the kind of words that you use when you are trying to mobilize violence. You know, the kind of violence that we call war. It is organized, legalized mass murder. That's war. And we have the President of the United States now, in my opinion, advocating violence against, at the very least, the governors of these states. And if not violence, then what? These yahoos who showed up yesterday in Michigan, day before yesterday in Michigan, egged on by a group funded in part by Betsy DeVos's family, were carrying semi-automatic rifles and Confederate battle flags. You know, the side that committed treason, the traitors that committed treason against the United States and then lost the war. Right, those losers. These losers in Michigan carrying around the loser's flag with guns. So you get a bunch of people who have a very low IQ, very little self-esteem, probably some sort of problems in their relationships, particularly with women, have some bizarre notions about their own racial superiority, and then you get the President of the United States egging them on. It's a prescription for violence. I mean, this goes way beyond Tea Party stuff. The Tea Party was bad enough. Get your government hands off my Medicare, right? And, you know, all the stupidity that was associated with the Tea Party. But this could lead to bloodshed. And there's no doubt in my mind that Donald Trump, sociopath, psychopath that he is, seems to delight in death and violence. I have not heard him once say, words to the effect of, you know, there's 34,000 dead Americans. Every single one of them had family. Almost every single one of them. Family, you know, who are mourning them. Children, grandchildren, siblings, friends, neighbors, coworkers, parents. Every single one of them, or virtually every single one of them, left behind somebody who cared. And instead of reaching out to those people who are in pain, I mean, if there's 34,000 dead Americans, there's hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of Americans whose lives have been impacted by the death of these people in their families, in their social circles, in their neighborhoods, in their workplaces. And we all need to be saying prayers for these people, or reaching out to them, or sending them light or good vibes, or doing what we can and remembering them. And I've never heard a word about that from Trump, because he doesn't understand empathy. He doesn't do empathy. The only thing he cares about is himself and his daughter. That's it. And her husband. You know, it's a grifter's got to grift with other grifters. Speaking of Trump, the New York Times published an article this morning, "When Older Relatives Shrug at Coronavirus Restrictions," and it's got story after story after story of old folks telling their kids, you know, their kids in their 40s and 50s and 60s, their parents in their 70s, 80s and 90s, telling their kids, "I don't worry about the virus. I'm going to go shopping. I'm going to go out to the store. You can't stop me." And the whole article, it's like, you know, this multi-page article by Julie Fingersch, is like asking, you know, what's with these people? And could it be the age positivity effect? And could it be they have radical acceptance? For the first time ever, I posted a comment on a New York Times article, and my comment was, this is the Fox effect. Fox's viewership is almost entirely over 60, and most of them over 70. And these are the people that they, you know, that they're writing about in the New York Times, scratching their heads, going, why aren't these people taking this thing seriously? They're not taking it seriously because they're watching Fox. And we need to be honest about that as a country and realize that we've got a propaganda arm for the billionaires, for the right-wing billionaires in this country, in Fox, run by a right-wing billionaire, a couple of right-wing billionaires, you know, Rupert and Lachlan, and it's killing us. I mean, even Michael Savage, the right-wing radio host, he came out, he's calling these people the pimps in the right-wing media who tell you what you want to hear. Gregory, Islington, South Carolina. Gregory, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Yes, you take that break, my brave soldier, because we're going to need you for the long haul. With that said, I also wanted to say that a lot of people don't recognize what it takes for these immigrants to stay reclusive. After this Trump scare they've had, we now see that they're not going to go to the doctor. Like that woman was telling you before, they can't go to the doctor because why? Once they're exposed, then the doctor's asking, well, who are you around? So now you have that contact, what do you call it, contact tracing?
Contact
so
tracing.
Suddenly, yeah. So suddenly you have a community that's already scared and now is epileptic. Okay.
Yeah, and especially if it's the federal government, you know, coming in, you know, their fear would be that ICE would be right behind them.
Exactly. Exactly. So now, you know, I'm a small farmer, and I'm serious. I am a small farmer. Probably, well, I am, but a minority small farmer, and I only say that because a lot of people do not see the value in farming. I was going to the farmer's market to sell some of my wares. Well, guess what? That's over with this year. Okay, I mean, it's just not going to happen. So the commercial farmers who once had like these immigrants working to harvest for them, well, they're not able to sell what they once were able to sell as well. You know, because the schools have closed, so they had to throw away their produce because their cows are still milking, their chickens are still producing eggs. Nowhere for it to go.
Yeah. I get it, Gregory. I got to run, but thank you. And thanks for introducing some humanity into this about so-called illegals, these undocumented workers. It is such a tragedy what is going on in this country and has been for 3 years now. Take a break from it. You know, find some meaning somewhere else. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow. We'll see you on Monday.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.